Hello, everyone, and welcome. I'm Bobby Laporte, CEO of Bobby Laporte & Associates and host of the Executive Aid Station. In today's competitive and dynamic executive workplace, we believe that leadership is an endurance event, and we are here to provide the support that today's leaders need. Our show guests are executives who have successfully achieved a balanced life, as well as experts in fitness, health and wellness, and personal leadership, who share their strategies for living and leading mindfully and gaining a competitive edge in the workplace. My special guest today is Dr. Krista Redigens, who is founder of Palo Alto Smart Therapy. Krista is a clinical psychologist who works with high achievers and other type A clients in private practice in Palo Alto. 17 years ago, Dr. Redigens was a technology and strategy consultant at a data warehousing and business strategy firm based in Chicago and Boston, working with knowledge management and strategy. She became a psychologist after a life-changing job burnout experience. Dr. Redigens earned a PhD in clinical psychology from the Institute of Transpersonal Psychology, where she learned a holistic, strength-based way of partnering with her clients in psychotherapy. She's the founder and director of Palo Alto Smart Therapy, which she founded in response to the need for smart, resourceful, and strong professionals to find psychotherapy in the demanding and often stressful environment of Silicon Valley. And today, Dr. Redigens is the kind of action-oriented therapist that she tried to find 15 years ago. So welcome to the Executive Aid Station, Krista. We're really excited to have you here on the show today.
Thanks, Bobby. I'm really excited to be with you.
So I want to start with your story, because you were kind of where some of your clients are today before you made a transition into psychology. So as I said in the intro, you used to be a technology consultant specializing in management and strategy. So yeah. Why did you decide to make a transition into psychology?
Okay, well, first of all, for the first few years, I really enjoyed consulting. I liked working with smart people on hard problems that were both stimulating and exciting, and it felt really good to make a living, a good living, for my intelligence and ability to work hard and explain challenging concepts. So there was some really good stuff. But after that initial excitement wore off, I settled into the life of a consultant with long hours and weekly travel, and I noticed a couple of things. First, I started to question if the work that I was doing was meaningful to me. So essentially, I concluded that the essence of the work that I was doing was making rich anonymous companies richer and more anonymous. And
right.
There's nothing wrong with that, but I didn't care about it. The second observation was that whereas at first the work travel felt romantic and exciting, a couple years into it started to really wear on me. And my then boyfriend, who's now my husband, would pick me up at the airport Thursday or Friday night. I'd do my laundry, get caught up with email and planning over the weekend, get back on a plane Saturday afternoon. And I just started to really question what I was doing when all that came together and I didn't have time for a life. So I was conflicted. On one hand, I enjoyed the money I was making and the certainty of having this mm-hmm. career path mapped out in front of me, and I enjoyed the ability to apply myself to hard problems. But on the other hand, I didn't care about the problems that were being solved. And when I looked at the lives of the people I reported to, I didn't see lives that I wanted to live as I got older. So I went to a few therapists, and they could tell me that I was a variation of depressed and or anxious, but they didn't understand what I was going through, and they didn't understand the professional pressure I was under, how tired I was, or how to mm-hmm. help me feel differently. And then I went to some coaches, and, you know, I didn't know you then, Bobby, so maybe working with you would have made a difference for me, but the person I went to could tell me I needed to make a new vision for myself and that I could think my way out of what was going on, but my problem wasn't a problem of thinking. My problem was that I wasn't engaged in the right work for me to be doing. So I was burned out, and I didn't feel alive in what I was doing, and I was chasing this idea of when I accomplish enough, I'll have the life I want. I didn't feel like my life had significance, like my professional life had significance, and I didn't feel like I'd earned professional significance. So I knew I wanted more meaning in my professional life, and I wanted to contribute to the world, but I also wanted to do it in a way that felt true to who I was, both mm-hmm. what I valued and what my particular set of proclivities would be uniquely suited for. So I went to an occupational psychologist who gave me a battery of assessments, and he told me very directly that if I didn't do what I cared about, and if it wasn't sufficiently stimulating for me, I was going to have a nervous breakdown, which was, you know, awesome news. And two, the battery strongly suggested that I should be a clinical psychologist.
How interesting. So, yeah,
that was kind of shocking for me. So I looked around for graduate schools of psychology that would teach me to partner with my clients in both strengths and challenges, and that would teach me to help people beyond traditional talk therapy, and that would force me to do some deep self-exploration. And I chose a program at the Institute of Transpersonal Psychology that was clinically rigorous, but that also required me to do my own work. So what I'll share with you about burnout and anxiety, we'll probably talk about that, and coming out the other side of it, I went through and I examined it deeply on my own, in my own experience, and then I came out the other side. But the program I went to helped me do that and not do it in a way that's just academic. So that's how I ended up leaving that career in consulting to attend a non-traditional transpersonal school of psychology, mm-hmm. to do a postdoc at a maximum security prison, and to now work with high achievers in Silicon Valley.
what a journey. But I mean, it really helps you relate to your clients, you know,
yeah.
challenges and problems, right? Because you can say I've been there. But I mean, I think that's truly like really amazing, and one of the things that definitely I'm sure distinguishes you. You know, you said that
everybody has their own variation. Everybody yes. has their own variation of you know, of what this looks like, but I know what's mine and what's theirs because I know what it looks like for me.
Right. Yes, exactly. Right. Now, Krista, you've said that in your practice, you help smart people feel better. And I've also heard you say that you work with people who have it all on paper. Now they want to have it all inside themselves and in their relationships too. So tell me, in general terms, what are some of the most common complaints and issues you hear about from clients? And what's the profile of the people that you work with?
Sure. So to start on kind of a strength-based platform, the people I see usually have an overarching goal of feeling at peace and at home in their own skin. Many of them have a goal of feeling like themselves again or being able to perform in a way they once did or even perform better. And they want to be able to enjoy these lives that they have that look amazing from the outside, but they want
right.
the inner to reflect the outer. So the four, I kind of distilled it into four groups, kind of four concerns that I see that kind of intermingle between them. But so the first group is people who are burned out. And I think we're going to talk about that more, so I'll
go
to the second group. Okay, so the second group is people who are waiting for the other shoe to drop. So these are the people who usually have experienced some milestone of success, so they've achieved their dream position, or they got the funding they were looking for, they sold their company, and instead of feeling at peace and joyful a week later, they're feeling dread. So having concerns like, I know something bad's going to happen and all this is going to fall apart, or what if? So that's kind of the second profile. The third is people who've spent a good amount of energy successfully hiding anxiety, and now they want to do something different. So they've been able to master their anxiety in the past, and now they want to shift it in a fundamental way. So often these people have had panic attacks and physical symptoms of anxiety like body tension or shallow breathing. Sometimes they hide sweaty palms or they have difficulty concentrating. And these are physical experiences, but then they're having emotional
right.
experiences of just, you know, anxiety. And it's like waiting for the other shoe to drop. And they sometimes have underlying secret thoughts that are variations of not good enough. So sometimes it's more like, I'm not smart enough, or people are going to believe they're lazy or weak or not organized, when, you know, from the outside, nobody sees that, but they don't know that. They have this idea that if they could only be strong enough or disciplined enough or perfect enough, everything would be okay. And they
right, it's never like, enough. Yep.
Yeah, yeah. So this is something that traditional talk therapy doesn't resolve. It can help someone feel more in control, but the people who come to me want the dynamic to shift in a major way. These people don't have more time to just talk about it. They want resolution, and so that's what we do. And then the fourth category is grief and trauma. It's made up of people who've experienced something terrible, and time hasn't been sufficient in helping them to feel like themselves again. That situation is sometimes, you know, the death of a family member or an important mentor or a divorce. But often here in the Valley, it's a professional setback, the closing of
right.
a company where the client invested a bunch of equity, sweat equity, and their own finances, or like a surprising negative performance review or an abusive board or a lawsuit. So those are the things I see a lot in my practice.
Very interesting. And you mentioned when we, in those profiles, I think the first one we talked about was burnout.
Yeah.
And of course, that's very prevalent in the Valley. And you and I have spoken in the past about job burnout in the workplace. And I notice it quite a bit with the executives that I work with as well. It's such a large topic. And I think you have so much great insight and meaningful information to share with people on it that what I'd like to do is treat this, you know, separately in a follow-on interview. I'd really like to bring you back and just completely devote an interview to the subject of burnout and what we can do about it today. But for the purposes of this interview we're doing now, maybe you could just touch on a few of the indicators that you look for clients that might be, you know, experiencing job burnout, some of the things that you see.
Okay, sure. So first to say there's no agreed on set of diagnostic symptoms for burnout in a clinical setting. So the tools that a therapist would use, the DSM or the ICD-10, to make a diagnostic evaluation, they don't have
right.
those specific guidelines. And so most psychologists or therapists who haven't studied burnout academically are going to diagnose burnout by observing a client's symptoms of physical or emotional exhaustion.
Okay,
so that's usually what, if you go to a therapist and you talk about burnout, that's what usually they're going to be talking about. But when you review the academic research, the criteria by Christina Maslach is really good and is often cited. So this is what I look for in my practice. First, we look for that emotional exhaustion piece, and that's the piece I just said a lot of therapists are going to look for. And some hallmarks of that are it's hard to get out of bed to go to work, especially after a weekend. Like Sunday night is really tough. Or after a week of vacation, you don't go back to work refreshed. Or you just feel emotionally tired and
right.
there's not a sense of resilience that after a demanding day. So that's the first thing. The second thing I look for is, it's a concept called depersonalization. Sometimes it's called cynicism. In this criteria, you look for cynicism, a detached attitude toward work, and a loss of idealism. So in that category, a big thing that I look for is when a person reports they're burned out, I'm looking for how that person responds to the people who are close to her, both professionally and personally. A lot of times you'll see folks who are burned out be callous or respond with irritation to those
mm-hmm.
folks. And and it's sad because usually there's this desire, like they can see it, there's this desire to change it, but they just don't know how because there's so much emotional and physical anxiety that the person has.
Right.
So it's hard to shift, and it can be really challenging. And in that criteria, another thing I look for is how important the work is to the person, and especially
right.
in reference to the person's work history and their title and their goals. So if someone's a CEO of a company that they founded and they believe in the mission, if they don't care anymore, that's something that I want to be looking at with them. The third criteria is inefficacy. And this is a criteria that it's a really important one, but it's often overlooked. So here, the burned out person has a reduced feeling of accomplishment. So before, they would have been competent in the past, they doubt that competency now. Mm-hmm. And that can be both something that other people observe, but it can be something that just they observe too. And this feeling of problems with competency impacts productivity and ability to cope.
Right.
So when I see this symptom in particular, I know we've got some really serious work to do.
Right. Oh, interesting. Yeah. I see. So you're talking about emotional exhaustion, depersonalization, and inefficacy.
Yep.
Excellent. That's super helpful. Thanks, Krista. I promise our audience that we'll bring you back as soon as possible on how to further discuss and address job burnout. Because I think
that.
It's so important. Yeah, and I think it's so important, and as I said, I see it as well, that I'm really excited to devote an entire show to this topic. So moving on, I've also noticed that anxiety has become more and more prevalent in today's workforce, and it doesn't seem like it's likely to subside, not based on what I see. So let's talk a little bit about anxiety. What can we do to reduce our level of anxiety and manage it better?
Okay, so this is a great question, Bobby, because you're right, it's all over the place. And there are some actions that people can take that have research backing them that you can get some pretty quick results with. So I'll just, go into those. So the first thing that I tell people to do is look into their sleep. So we're finding that sleep is very, very important to brain health. So for example, recent research has pointed to if you get less than 7 hours of sleep nightly, it's a pretty big, significant risk factor for Alzheimer's. So if you're getting less than 7 hours of sleep a night, that would be an area to improve. And getting the right amount of sleep can be a huge factor in reducing anxiety. So that would be the first thing.
I know very few people who get 8 hours.
I know.
So,
I know.
But I agree with you. All the research I see, basically, just talks about, especially the older you get, it's just really important because you need that both for like physical and mental recovery.
Absolutely.
So good.
And the less sleep you get, the more your brain is incentivized to sleep less. So you have to start sleeping more so your brain can allow you to sleep more. It's the
interesting
transition process.
Process.
Anyway, okay. So sleep, exercise. So that's the second thing I always look at with my clients. So exercising 6 days a week for 20 to 30 minutes a day to the extent that you're sweating lightly or it's challenging to carry on a conversation, that gives better results statistically than anti-anxiety meds, and it has no side effects. No negative side effects. It's got a lot of positive side effects. But
exactly.
So that's a big thing that I encourage people to do. And then the third thing that I talk to people about is diaphragmatic breathing. Okay, so speaking of better results than anti-anxiety medication statistically with, again, no negative side effects, diaphragmatic breathing for 10 minutes a day, 7 days a week is better than meds. So I teach people to do this all the time, but in the interest of time, if any of your listeners want to get I've got a tip sheet on how to do diaphragmatic breathing, they can email us at contact@paloaltosmarttherapy.com. And we can have my assistant send them out an instruction sheet on it.
Oh, excellent. We'll put that on the website and in the show notes as well.
Okay, cool.
Thank you for offering that.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so when you get past kind of those practical things, if you've tried 6 days a week exercise, in the Valley, I often get calls from people when I do a consultation on the phone who are already exercising 6 or 7 days a week, or you already meditate and you sleep well and you want to go deeper, or if you just want to go deeper and you're not doing those things, here's some other suggestions for that. Does this sound interesting, Bobby?
Yes. So you're starting with the sort of the more obvious physical things, right? But that might, some people may already be already practicing those. So now you're trying to get to the more sort of deeper awareness of other things that could be signals of anxiety that could help them manage, right?
Yeah, so those things you can just kind of read about quickly,
Right.
But this stuff is a little bit deeper. So, okay. So first, When you're experiencing anxiety, notice when and in what situations that happens. So mm-hmm. do you experience anxiety when you prepare to present to a board meeting or to investors? Do you notice it when you're driving to work or over a bridge or when you're working on some deliverable in particular? Is it a deadline that is involved in your anxiety spike? Or is it when you don't have anything to do and the internet's out, or when your partner requests that you turn off the electronics and you can't distract yourself? So that's the first thing. Notice when mm-hmm. and in what situation it happens.
Okay.
Then you want to become a sophisticated observer of your tells. So it's kind of like a poker tell. The goal here is to more quickly catch when you're experiencing anxiety. So you want to know what happens to you when you get stressed, and some specific things you can look out for are, so one, what are the thoughts you think about when you're stressed? Do you start to have judgmental thoughts about yourself or other people? Does it become hard to think? Does your mind go blank? Or does your mind become more focused and hypervigilant? So what is the pattern of worries you have when you're stressed, when you're anxious?
Okay.
So after you look at your thoughts, then you can look at your emotional experience. Do you find yourself feeling sad or angry or panicked or excited or impatient? Do you experience a feeling of dread? Are the emotions you're feeling a combination of these things, or is there another emotion that's present when you have the experience of feeling anxious? So the third is, what body sensations usually accompany anxiety for you? Does your chest feel tight or warm?
Mm-hmm.
Is your jaw or your hands or legs, are those tense? Does your mind feel foggy? Does your head ache? Do you notice tears in your eyes? What are the body sensations? And then the last thing you can look at, none of these are, we're not talking about a hierarchical list. These are just things to pay attention to.
Right.
But the fourth, so what's the meaning that you make about yourself when you're stressed? At the moment of feeling anxiety, how do you complete the following sentence? I am, is it lazy or a variation of not good enough or not safe? What is the meaning you make about yourself when you get stressed? Okay, so when you look at those aspects of what your tells are, then
right.
the next step you can do is see if you can observe this constellation of experience of anxiety that's your personal constellation, the thoughts, the emotions, the body sensations, the identification of meaning that you have. And you sit with that feeling of being stressed. And you can notice a bunch of things. You can notice if it's an old familiar constellation
mm-hmm.
or if it's connected to this moment, this job, this relationship. And notice what you are feeling is not you, and you're not the feeling. It's a combination of a particular thought, emotion, body sensation, meaning pattern. Okay? So after you put all this together and you sat with it, doing this exercise can allow your reactions to become a source of data that can increase your self-knowledge and allow
right.
you to have more choices. So it's not you, it's just something you're experiencing. So instead of feeling like your life is happening to you, you can have more control about what you react to and how you experience the world. So if this is intriguing and your listeners want to engage in next steps, working with a trained, experienced, curious therapist can take these possibilities from this, you know, encapsulated work we talked about to a different level of internal ease and knowledge and power that people that I find who are type A's and high achievers really,
right.
really want. Yeah.
So I love the way you talk about this as this constellation of experience, and that you talked about it's a combination of thought, emotions, body, meaning, this pattern. Do you find that, because everybody is so stressed and busy and distracted, is it, how hard is it for the people that you work with, for them to be able to build a self-awareness around all this sort of constellation of experience that you talked about, to build that self-awareness, to be able to like sit with it, you know, do they come to you, say, yes, I now, this is what I see and what I feel? Do they have to have see all of these things, or is it enough for them to be able to maybe just think about the bodily sensations or kind of the emotional experience? So this seems like
a good question.
It's a lot, right? It's a lot lot for people to self-diagnose, get to the point where they can either manage it on their own, right?
Totally. And there's there's so much complexity to what I just said. It just taking one of the aspects, just looking at the thoughts or just looking at the emotional experience can be a huge step towards having a different awareness of yourself.
Right.
And it can be really intimidating to do this work by yourself, but also with a therapist. And a good therapist is going to kind of break this down for
right.
a person so that it feels a lot more easy and less intimidating, too. Because it doesn't have to – it's hard work, don't get me wrong, but it doesn't have to be super scary.
Yeah.
And one of the big roadblocks for people is that they feel like they have to get it right. And sometimes that's the antithesis of what the experience can actually be. You just need a little help figuring out that it's okay to just have the experience.
I think that's an important distinction. Right. That's an important distinction too, that they don't have to get it right. It's just being able to take that first step.
Yeah.
Right.
Exactly. Yeah.
Fascinating.
So many of us who are high achievers, type A folks, grew up in a situation where they feel like they have to get it right or something bad's going to happen. They have to get it right every time. And that's not true.
Right.
It's just not reality.
Right.
But it's very different knowing it intellectually and knowing it emotionally, knowing it in your body. It's different.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. One other question I had for you, I wanted to explore a little bit more about how you describe your approach to therapy. You describe it as active.
Mm-hmm.
So what does that mean?
Okay. So let me start with saying I do a lot of phone consultations with potential clients to see if we're the right team to work together for their goals. And I always ask people if they've been in therapy before because I want to know what's worked for them in the past and what hasn't.
Right.
And there are many, many types of psychotherapy out there, just like there are many types of people who are therapists. I want to make sure that what I have to offer is the best fit for who I'm talking to. And if not, I usually have a good idea about who to refer them to. And the biggest complaint I hear about people's past experiences with therapists is they feel that the therapist just listened. And the client's
mm-hmm.
frustrated because they feel like they just talked. And they report
right.
that beyond telling their story, which, I mean, really can be truly healing for someone, especially if they haven't told their story before, they don't feel like there was change in their lives beyond getting past the moment of struggle they were in. So when I say I do therapy that's active with people, it means that my clients and I engage in a therapeutic process that involves more than just talking about. So first, it involves exploring how they want to feel different, what their goals are, and how to get them there. And working in a process like this usually involves doing experiments. So
right.
after we've identified specific goals, if it's appropriate for the goals we've set up, we figure out the low-hanging fruit. So if a client isn't exercising or sleeping enough, we do experiments involving how to make that shift because it has such a big impact. And sometimes that's the whole work. But the next step, if it's not, the next step, we see how the client's getting in their own way. So we look at circumstances triggering the emotional experience they don't want to have. And depending on the data we get, we'll engage in processing that involves multiple aspects of the client's consciousness to move toward our goals. So often we'll use a method like EMDR or sensory motor therapy
mm-hmm.
to get at the physical, cognitive, emotional, neural coding that's getting in the way with the goal of rewiring the brain to desensitize past trauma that's being triggered, and then we'll build positive emotional scaffolding. So once we have some positive neural movement, we're going to reinforce new changes that have been made and look at the new reality the person's experiencing, which can involve new aspects of personal identity, changes in relationships,
right.
and a focus on grounding. And that's like the post-traumatic growth that can come out of our work. So I say active, what I mean is my clients and I are involved in a process that takes awareness and attention on both our parts, and we both agree agree to and take responsibility for our part in the movement towards change. We do a lot of talking about, but there's a goal of movement.
This is all absolutely fascinating to me, and I'm sure it will be to our audience as well, and so helpful to them, and we could go on forever.
I know.
And we will have a second session to talk more about job burnout, maybe explore some of these other topics a little bit more. We're kind of pushing the end of our time together. So I want to, first of all, I want to thank you, but I also want to ask you, how else can our audience stay in touch with you? We'll definitely include the link you mentioned earlier for the tip sheet that you have, but how else could they reach you?
Well, if they're interested in getting in touch, they can look at our website, www.paloaltosmarttherapy.com, and they can give us a call or text to 650-422-2944, or can send us an email. If you want to email me directly, I'm at Krista@paloaltosmarttherapy.com.
Perfect. Krista, thank you so much. It has been such a pleasure having you on our
pleasure,
show today.
Oh, my pleasure, Bobby. Anytime I get to talk to you, I love it.
Oh, you're so sweet. Thank you. same here. I learned so much. And I think we see from different lenses, we see some of the same challenges with our clients.
Totally.
So I've really enjoyed our conversation. I appreciate your advice and insights for our listeners. And I do look forward to a follow-up session with you so we can focus on the subjects of both burnout and also how we can work to achieve more work-life and mind-body balance. We didn't really get to that today, but we'll definitely include that in the next session that we take. So thank you again for your time. And to our listeners, thank you for joining us. That is it for today's show. Please visit our website, www.bobbylaporte.com, and sign up for our Executive Aid Station updates. I look forward to sharing our next episode of the Executive Aid Station with you, and stay tuned.